So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to give a summary very, very briefly up to where we are. And then we'll chant the verses together up to where we are. So after I give that summary, you could look at the verses. And then I'm going to review the fifth chapter. Part of it we didn't finish on Uttama Adhikari, the topmost devotee. And I'm going to review again the different ways you can see the grades of devotees. And then we'll go into the verse 6. After this, we have three more classes, so you may want to make a final push. Try to all be here for the final three classes. But I may continue and give a class in the summer or two, because maybe I won't exactly finish it, because the last class I'm supposed to cover three verses. But no, not possible. Well, it's all about the one subject. What is the highest destination? But anyway, we'll discuss that. So remember, I always try to give this kind of material spiritual dichotomy, where material means you put yourself in the center and you try to move the world according to your desires, and you're seeking this feeling of superiority through your sensual domination, through your ego. It's very, very subtle. Or it could be very, very gross. But that's material consciousness. And spiritual consciousness is the opposite. You're developing this desire to serve and love and to serve. Nikki, please come in. When I saw you all dressed up running out the door, I thought I'd never see you today again. Okay? So that's spiritual, and that love, Tvasmin Parama Prema Rup, that love for everything, love of Godhead, becomes, you know, when you have love, love is humility and love is surrender, and everyone's looking for it. Because when you have love, you want to follow not your own desire, but to please the desire of someone else. And, you know, even though these terms, humility and surrender, in a modern world may, you know, not really be understood or look attractive, I just took a walk. I try to walk every day. So at least I walk to the end of Washington Square Park and back. And I'm walking, and there's all these groups, things. People, what is a group? People want to be part of something that's greater than themselves because they want to experience love. So it's so natural what everyone is looking for. But there's a real reality of what you're really part of, which is God. And that, so getting this is what we're trying to do. And this book is about people who want this. And so as you remember, the first verse gave the symptoms of a person who is qualified spiritually. And the basic symptom is he's no longer the slave to the impulses coming from the false ego. Right? There's impulses. And where the impulses are not connected to the soul, the impulses are connected to this false identity which we live in and tortures us. Our anxieties, our fears, our desires, our ambitions, and it tortures us. So the first spiritual thing is to control that impulses which reinforce that conception, right? And then it went to show, then we had a few verses which starts to show the the practices and external practices and behavior of someone who is practicing to develop that loving consciousness and get out of that material consciousness. So he first described, right, that there were six unfavorable things that will root you in the ego, right? Over-collecting, unnecessary endeavor, idle talk, you know, egotistically dealing with rules, either, you know, not following them or just following them for the sake of rules, and material greed, where your real objective is. You got to avoid these things, and jhana sangha, mundane association. Then the other symptom of external behavior and practices is what are things that are favorable, that you're enthusiastic, you're patient, you're confident. Utsyan nistiyata tat tat karma. You follow practices. So it describes six symptoms, and as a key element of that external behavior is one of the most favorable things, a satsang tyag. I remember, Ashley, you wrote that nice question, and we had a very comprehensive answer of what that means practically in the world. And that's what we want here. We want these type of discussions. So a satsang tyag and jhana sangha, there's so much about sadhu sangha. It's really the key, right? Where your association is. So how to do that? How to do that, especially with those that have something to give you. And there were six loving exchanges that were described. The dati pritigrinati, giving gifts, taking gifts. Guyamatyachi prichati, inquiring in confidence. And inquiring in confidence and good. Inquiring in confidence and revealing one's mind in confidence and giving prasada. And we had that whole concept of accepting and what consciousness it gives you when you're accepting mercy and how that makes you feel God conscious and humble and puts you in the proper perspective of how you deal with this world. And I like the concept of prasadam, that anamoya, the first material consciousness, is dealing with the world for self-preservation, especially food, and how important it is to deal with that aspect properly, to deal with that aspect accepting it in the mood of my quota. So we had, you know, all these discussions. And then we began to discuss last time the internal development and vision of someone who is seeking this type of consciousness. And we had a verse of how to see, right? Because it says devotees, how to see. And there were divisions of devotees. How to discriminate for dealing with others and moving yourself to a higher platform. And then the today's verse is going to be how not to see. And it's a very, very interesting concept, how not to see. You know, these divisions, they're based on an internal mood of surrender and devotion. And you have to really be able to see that and not get so distracted by various externals. It's a very, very fine line. Various externals, which happen when people are just embodied. You know, sometimes we don't like a person. It's not the person we don't like. It's not the whole person we don't like. It's that little aspect of that person which is in conflict with the little aspect of ourself called false ego. So even someone's advanced, they may have an aspect that disturbs us, which may not even be their core internal surrender. It's a very important thing. That's what we're going to discuss today. Now, let's go and let's chant the verses, looking at that, okay, we'll chant them responsively. I think we can chant them together at my pace, though. And I'm not doing that at ego, I'm doing that out of service, because it's kind of chaos. I remember these two very powerful devotees, like the most powerful devotees in the movement. And they decided they were living together in Vrindavan, and they were all both very strong, and they decided every day to chant the Bhagavad Gita together. Yeah, but one liked to chant fast and one liked to chant slow, and neither would compromise. So, okay, I want to make sure I'm out of the way so you all can see there too. Vacha vegam manasa krodha vegam jiva vegam udara pasta vegam Etan veganyo vishaheti dira sarvam apimam prithivim sasishat. A sober person who can tolerate the urge to speak, the mind's demands, the actions of anger, and the urges of the tongue, belly, and genitals is qualified to make disciples all over the world. Text 2. Atyahara payasascha Pajalpo niyamagraha janasangaschalolyam cha shadbir bhaktir vanashyati. Who wants to read? Ashley, read.
One's devotional service is spoiled when he becomes too entangled in the following six activities: eating more than necessary or collecting more funds than required, over endeavoring for mundane things that are very difficult to obtain, talking unnecessarily about mundane subject matters, practicing the scriptural rules and regulations only for the sake of following them and not for the sake of spiritual advancement, or rejecting the rules and regulations of the scriptures and working independently or whimsically, associating with worldly-minded persons who are not interested in Krishna consciousness, and being greedy for mundane achievements.
Okay, next word. Utsahan nishtayat daryat tat tat karma pavartanat sangatyagat sato vrite shabdir bhakti pasidyati. Saibel, you can read.
There are six principles favorable to the execution of pure devotional service. One, being enthusiastic. Two, endeavoring with confidence. Three, being patient. Four, acting accordingly to regulative principles such as
Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam.
Hearing, chanting, and remembering Krishna. Five, abandoning the association of non-devotees. And six, following in the footsteps of previous acharyas. These are the principles undoubtedly assure the complete success of pure devotional service.
Good. Text 4. Okay. Dadati pritagrinati guyam akyati pritchati punte bojyate chaiva shadvidham pritilakshanam. Want to read? Yeah.
Offering gifts in charity, accepting charitable gifts, revealing one's mind in confidence, inquiring confidentially, accepting prasada, and offering prasada are the six symptoms of love shared by one devotee and another.
Krishneti yasya giratam manasadriyeta dikshasti chet pranita bhischa bhajantam isham shusrushaya bhajana vigyam ananya anya Nindati shunya hidam ipsita sangha labdhya. Jai Shri Radhe.
One should mentally honor the devotee who chants the holy name of Lord Krishna, one should offer humble obeisances to the devotee who has undergone spiritual initiation, diksha, and is engaged in worshipping the deity, and one should associate with faithfully serve that pure devotee who is advanced in under
deviated
devotional service and whose heart is completely devoid of the prosperity of criticized others.
She's my translator when I go to Russia. No, she is. I don't know if you know. She is. When I go to Russia, she translates my lectures to Russian. So, 2 years ago, she didn't even speak English. Not that much. Not that much. But she learned because she wanted to translate. So it was great. Okay. Now, Rati, let's go to the summary of text 5, okay? We're going to review text 5. You know, what happens in this class is, and I've studied this book many times. This is the first time I'm actually teaching this book, and which is unusual because I've practically taught so many books. And so it's nice, once you teach, it activates your mind and you understand things clearly. That's why I like to kind of summarize it more. But, okay, let's go to text 5. Okay. Now, this is how, because it discussed about how important it is to have loving exchanges, especially sadhu sangha. And what is sadhu sangha? Association with devotees. But the first class sadhu sangha is more advanced, like-minded, and relationship. That's the most important thing, that more advanced. So how to discriminate? Because even in these exchanges, there's inquiring and there's revealing. Whether you're inquiring or revealing depends on what devotee you're dealing with. So you have to understand the distinctions. So the main thing I want to say, because there's about 3 or 4 ways in which Prabhupada, it's from the Shastra, is categorizing this Kanishna Adhikari, the beginning stage, Madhyama Adhikari, the middle stage, and Uttama. So don't just take the most liberal definition and say, that's me. So I really wanted to make that a little bit more clear. And it's kind of a combination, but the main test is what's mentioned in this verse. And the main test is first of all, to be adhikari, to be qualified, really means some preliminary faith of seeing the name of Krishna as non-different from Krishna. And so this verse that Rupa Goswami wrote was based on a dialogue between someone called Satyaraj Khan and Lord Chaitanya. Where Lord Chaitanya went to his village, Kuliniagram, and he asked, how can I advance? And he said, well, you know, you should associate with Vaishnavas. And he said, well, who's a Vaishnava? And he gave 3 different answers, Lord Chaitanya, which are summarized, and how you deal with them. One who has some conviction, and therefore he can chant the name. They're to be respected. And Prabhupada gave the quote about George Harrison and how much Prabhupada respected him, even though he wasn't initiated or committed, how much Prabhupada respected him because of having Krishna chanting the name. And then dikshasti, spiritual initiation, I'm taking this as, you know, not just the formality, but the level of commitment. Someone who really becomes committed, really committed to the will of God coming through the representative of God and surrendered to that. And then the most advanced, is, you know, the heart's completely pure. It doesn't even have the propensity to criticize others because there's no envy. And sometimes they say the highest stage is no envy. And that envy, it's not just subtle how you deal with people. It's how you deal with the world to get ahead of people. So these were different distinctions. Now, next verse. And then, again, there were three different ways it was discussed. One was by faith and knowledge. Remember? And again, I kind of think we have to mix all these together. It's not just one level. It's gradations on levels, and these touch different gradations on different levels. But of the beginner, really the lowest, is just worshiping the deity, but not behaving well with others. And the hypocrisy of dealing with someone inside and outside in a different way. In public, the deity. In the heart, no. And then, next verse. And then this becomes actually, in terms of faith, it was something else what was mentioned. Excuse me. In terms of faith, it was mentioned that there wasn't your faith wasn't strong, and your knowledge of the Shastra wasn't strong. So your qualification for practice is not very high because you don't even know what are the principles to practice, nor do you have conviction in them. When you read the sacred text, one thing about this class, and I've been always doing this, and I think this is one savor that I like to do. I think when people come to spiritual life, when they start reading the text and learning the text, it's not just an intellectual process. It develops faith. And you advance by your faith. And faith is not just I believe or I don't believe. It's a different type of faith. It's a faith in terms of conviction. It's really different. Because as everyone here may or may not, I assume probably most everyone, but maybe not everyone. You know, Krishna is God, I have faith. No, but what is your conviction of that? So there's a depth of conviction. And I guess in one sense, this is what's talking about the depth of conviction. And it's very much connected that your conviction will increase by hearing the Shastra. Hearing, accepting, this is the truth. Oh, this is the truth. What does the truth say? And then you'll look at it in the world and you'll apply it and then you'll realize it. And that's actually what happens from hearing. You hear, Upanishads say, you hear, you think, you apply, you realize. So this type of conviction. And then the topmost conviction is, you see, in the beginning stage, you can hear opposing things and become very confused. But when you reach the middle plot, your faith will be very strong. Your conviction will be very strong, even if you don't have all the answers. And the Uttama Adhikari is you really have heard the sacred text, you've applied the sacred text, and it really develops conviction. Like there's one book that I like by one of Prabhupada's godbrothers. I met him. He was 101 years old. Can I tell a story about him?
Yes, please.
In 1950, Prabhupada asked one brahmachari, a monk in India, to come with him. But his guru said, no, we need him here. Then, 30 years later, he shows up in New York. And I became his friend. And he was a very humble person. He used to sit in my classes, even though he was an older man. So he's my friend. So he invites me to the disappearance festival of his Guru Maharaj by the Gaudiya Math, that's the temple, by the train station in Vrindavan. So I go, and when I'm there, he says, do you know that Prabhupada's godbrother is upstairs? You'd like to see him. He was the Puri Maharaj, and there was two more Puri Maharajas, the younger Puri Maharaj, who was 93, and the older Puri Maharaj, who was 101. So you ever see a person who's 101? So he's like, you know, bent over. And then it's a fast day because on the disappearance day of great souls, they fast. So it's a fast day. So what happens is he's sitting there, and I'm just kind of sitting there, and it's mostly Bengalis. And different people, Bengalis seem to have the best appetite of all different types of Indians. I don't know why, but they seem to have a great appetite. And one brahmachari runs in, that's a monk, and he says, the feast is ready, prasadam's ready, all the Vaishnavas must come. I don't understand Bengali, but I see a stampede of people out of the room. And then I see this old man, 101, getting up. And then his assistant says to him, where are you going? Don't you know we will bring the food to you? And he says, I remember it. What's that?
Music.
What?
Music.
What's it?
I will figure out.
Okay, just... I mean, if it's a regular program, it's fine, but it seems like something amplified. Anyway, what he says is, when the Vaishnavas command, I must obey. So he was so sweet. And he was so humble. I fear it's actually another program that's amplified. But anyway, I'll plow through it. But, you know, it takes concentration. Especially it takes concentration because I have so much to cover. So I can't miss a beat. Okay. And then there was a division by your expansion of love. Right? So, no, keep on going, Rati. One back. Okay?
Kanishta?
Yeah, this is it. And the Kanishta, his expansion of love is very limited to God and not to others. Right? And you can actually see that as a beginning, a neophyte, really low level of the neophyte. It's only to God, it's not to others. Then the love expands, the next verse. And he loves everyone in an appropriate way also, and he can make distinctions. And he loves God, prema. He really has love for God. He has deep friendship for the devotees. He loves devotees, but that love is friendship. And he's compassionate to those who you know, don't have knowledge. See, he loves people in that way. And because he loves Krishna, he avoids those who are envious by nature. So it's the love is expansive. And then the love becomes overwhelming. It becomes so overwhelming that you see through your love, and therefore you see everyone connected with Krishna. And sometimes you see everyone loving Krishna more than yourself. And then it says, and then you see everyone as guru. And even you see the grass as guru. You see the grass as guru, Trinadapi, it's teaching you humility. So you see, everyone is guru but me. And here, everyone wants to be guru of everyone else. Everyone is guru except me. Everyone is serving Krishna. The love is just overflowing and overwhelming. So that's by love. And then by chanting again, right? And one who is... And it's degrees. And the verse talked about, and we're going to explain it, dikshita, one who's actually committed. And they, you know, someone who chants, offer the respect, someone who's committed, you may pay obeisances, and then someone who, just by seeing, you become inspired in devotional service, you surrender and worship that person. So now we'll discuss... this Uttama Adhikari, the topmost devotee. When you find that person who is incessantly chanting the holy name of Krishna, you will take him as a real devotee and you will try to serve him. It's not that he's struggling to chant, he's struggling not to chant. Yeah. And there's a famous story where this one Vaishnava, he went to the fields to go to the bathroom, to pass stool. He went to the fields. So he was so in love with Krishna that he bit his tongue. Because he thought, in this place, that the name is non-different than Krishna, I shouldn't bring Krishna. You know? And then there was a young little boy. He said, why? We should always chant Krishna. Even at the moment of death, we should chant Krishna. We should always remember Krishna. And then Lord Chaitanya looked at the boy and said, you a guru. Yeah. And then that boy became known as Gopal Guru. And he became one of the great teachers in our line. So that person, and your advancement really is your taste for hearing and chanting. That's your advancement. And I told last time, I'll tell the story again, but we told about Krishna Das Babaji, Prabhupada's godbrother. Of course, Prabhupada was always thinking of Krishna. And his chanting was mostly his preaching, which is kirtan. Okay, we'll go. The Uttama Adhikari, the highest devotee, is one who is very advanced in devotional service. He's not interested in blaspheming others. His heart is completely clean, and he's attained the realized state of unalloyed Krishna consciousness. According to Rupa Goswami, the association and service of such a Mahabhagavat, a perfect Vaishnav, is most desirable. The more advanced the devotee is that you're connected with, because guru also means Krishna. Krishna is speaking through a person to you. So... that's most desirable. And his quality is he just doesn't like to criticize others. Because this criticism of others is controlling the world, its power. It's connected to material consciousness. Material consciousness means you want to be superior. And one way to get superior is to get power. And another way is to take away others' power. So you like to criticize. And it's there. And the most advanced devotee, it's not there at all. And then if you find a devotee of Krishna by whose sight you feel inclined to take the holy name, then he is the highest type of devotee of Krishna. Next thing. Then Prabhupada wants to also put in the quality for the person that he really likes to preach and he really likes to help others and he's always meditating. He's always thinking of others before himself. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur also said, and Prabhupada also repeated, that sometimes you can tell an advanced devotee by his ability to make other people devotees and bring other people and inspire them in their heart. So this is one thing that Prabhupada really stressed. Seriously engaged, strictly following, chanting, always thinking how to expand. So that's another way we see someone who's very advanced. Next one. And in the Nectar of Instruction, Prabhupada said, those six qualities of exchanges, it's really beneficial to engage with such a person in that way. And a person realizes himself to be an eternal servant of Krishna. His no other interest. That's what a pure devotional service means. Anyabhilashita shunyam. Zero other interest. Except anukuyena Krishna anushilanam. Except pleasing Krishna. And Krishna is not a narrow concept. Krishna also includes his parts and parcels and his energies and his expansions. But always wanting to serve and please others. Not that the person is just advanced to take service. Someone can be guru, but he's guru because he's servant of his guru. And he does it only as a service. It's not like wanting to be a rock star. I want to be a guru. Because then I can control. But no. He doesn't want praise. He doesn't want. And then, again, commentary. It's about his chanting of the name. An advanced devotee is according to how he chants the name. And when we find someone who's continuously in the serving mood, who's always connected, we should serve him. And we should do anything for him. Because it's not for him, it's for Krishna. Because he only wants to serve Krishna. And he's immersed himself in the taste of the sweetness of the holy name of the Lord and his lila. And he has a quality of chanting the real name is on his lips. I think in the next verse, which is about the essence of all advice. That's the next verse, the essence of all advice. This is about chanting and thinking of Krishna. We'll talk about different levels of chanting. But it's like the sun. The benefit of the sun depends on the lack of obstruction between you and the sun. It's not that the sun can be covered, but you can cover yourself from the sun, even though the sun is so powerful. So the way you cover yourself from spiritual effect, from the name and realizing the name and having the name is aparad or offenses. Aparad, rada, worship. Appa means to separate yourself from worship. There are 10 offenses to the holy name. The most serious offense is sadhu ninda, that you criticize. We're going to discuss more about this. You criticize those that are giving themselves to God. And then there's another stage, namabhas, where it's like the dawn. when it's dawn, the sun is not full, but at least there's enough light that the rogues and thieves won't come out. And then there's the midday where the full effect of the sun is there. So there's the pure name. So these divisions also in terms of the name. And you can feel that. I told you the story of Madhava. He was actually talking with Bobby. She came last time, and Amanda of Prem Yoga, after he did kirtan on the lawn. And it was just an amazing kirtan. And he was sincerely talking to them that when he's chanting, it's like fire coming out of his mouth. It's not that he's chanting the name is chanting him. It's something beyond him. Krishna has appeared due to the sincerity of heart. And the full name comes out and has an effect. I'm always amazed when I see someone who chants the pure name. It may not be the musically superior, but the effect is so powerful. Because it's not entertainment. It's service. It's not about that person. It's about God and God and his name. That name has an effect. And that's really what's nice about the Bhakti Center, in line from Prabhupada, the kirtan. It's the cyclic succession of prema kirtan. What people are doing kirtan out of love, not out of ego. And they're conscious. And especially these young people that were born in the movement, they have kind of like a culture together where you don't see them pushing up to lead or one or another. It doesn't matter who leads. You know what I'm saying? You see that consciously. And therefore you see the effect that that name has. Then it talks about Diksha. And this is why someone who has Diksha, it's going to explain why now you should really pay your obeisances to that person. The respect level is greater because the commitment is there and there's Krishna's acceptance because there's a change of identity and real initiation. And I gave that example before. The lady in the proper culture is the daughter of her husband, and then a daughter of the father then becomes the wife of the husband. And with the commitment comes a change of identity. So this person has changed their identity. I am just a servant of Guru and Krishna. And when you do that, not just get the name, not just sit in the fire, but when you actually do that, there's something very dynamic. Krishna accepts you as his own. And then the next verse describes that. You will only bow down to him when he is Diksha, when the agent of the Lord accepts him, when he has the holy name in his ear and his heart, the holy name has been distributed to him. Diksha means connection with the Sadguru. Krishna has accepted him as his devotee through his real agent. That is acceptance from the devotional party of Krishna. Then when we bow down to him because the seed has come within his heart, Krishna has come to capture his heart. In the temple of his heart, Krishna is descended. Then we will show physical honor to him, not only mental, but physical also. Because our culture is not structured like that, to go around mentally figuring out who's who and what that, you know, but respect should be there as much as possible to everyone. Now, I should mention one thing also. There's a little technical that I don't know if I can describe it here fully. But the initiation process, there's five things. One is tapa. There's a sense of regret for just serving our senses and serving our ego. And then there's pondra. Pondra means then there's tilak, there's identification. strong identification of belonging to Krishna. And then there is Nam, and then you get a name that identifies with Krishna. Then there's mantra. The Nam, you also get the holy name. Mantra means you get what's called Gayatri mantras, very, very powerful purificatory mantras. In our tradition, we get the Guru Gayatri, we get the Gaur Gayatri, we get the Gopal mantra, we get the Kam Gayatri, we get the Brahma Gayatri. You get various mantras, and they're very, very powerful for purifying you of material attachment. So these five are divided in different ways, in different traditions. Because generally, when you just get the Nam, that's called Harinam. And only when you get the mantra is it actually called Diksha. We call Diksha for even the Harinam. When somebody, we call it first and second. But Prabhupada set a very high standard for first. So it's really a big commitment in first, where in other Gaudiya Mats, they give it like very easily. And they consider like the real thing, you know, when you really committed, then we give Diksha, we give the mantras. But Prabhupada, even on the first, it was quite a commitment. So next verse describes what happens by Diksha when you get these mantras. What I realize right now, that this particular subject, I don't really have time to discuss it in depth because it's really deep. But if someone writes that down, if we have extra classes, like if I do one June 18th, I'm not going to be back for June 7th or whatever. June 18th, I'm going to have the last class. And if you're around on June 19th, Alexandra Forsyth will get initiated in New Jersey. If anyone wants to come, they can come. We'll tell you where it is. I will initiate her in New Jersey. So, but this Diksha will just... I won't describe the difference between Nam and Diksha, but with that commitment, what happens is D means to give and Sha means to destroy. So it destroys your material attachment with that commitment, and D means to give, and what does it give? Divya Gyan. It gives a sense of your relationship with God. It gives you a sense of relationship with God, and it destroys the material things. That's all I'm going to say about this now. But if I give another class in July on a beautiful beach day where I'm sitting here alone, me and Satya Hari, and Ruti came to film.
And they
out of your compassion. Out of your compassion. And Gail never misses anything. And Nikki's in the building. So a few people will be here, I'm sure. And Priya won't miss, so Kishore will have to come. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, what this indicates, this next one is really heavy. Bhakti Sant, you said unless one chants at least 64 rounds, one is considered fallen. But what it really means is when you're really committed, you're serving all the time. And when you're not serving, you're chanting. So they say 64 rounds, but they say at least four. but they're always serving. And it means always serving. And sometimes I take this vow at different times of the year. and you really don't have time for anything else. And then you realize how much other time you waste. So it's really wonderful, especially in the month of Kartik. It's the month of October. I have a little place by the side of Govardhan Hill, and I take that month off for myself. It used to be. And it's so wonderful. We walk around Govardhan Hill every day. And but anyway, we'll advance by our commitment to the holy name. And, you know, we just make a plan. And result is that you will, your relationship with Krishna will awaken in your heart. So that's, I did pretty good. That's the summary of the previous. Now, this is going to be a very interesting, we'll go to the next one, Rati. This is a very interesting one because it just said how to see a devotee, but now it's going to tell you how not to see a devotee. Oh, you want to put this here? Okay. Okay. Service is always most important. So he has to go and serve. So this is how not to see a devotee. And there's always two parts of a devotee, really. One is the inspired side, his connection with Krishna. And then there's the body that he's in, which sometimes may get angry and sometimes may seem greedy and sometimes may see this. And you really have to see the heart, how committed and surrendered a person is. And naturally, all good qualities will come. But we're in the world, and we have our own vision, and people have their own natures. And we're jealous, and we're envious, and so many things. So this verse is really going to tell you, warn against a materialistic mindset, offensive mindset towards devotees, or to anyone. Someone asked me that, because I practice this class on Friday. I call up Columbia, so I get one practice for it. So someone asked me, well, why only in relationship to a devotee? Right? Why not everyone? Right? Why is it saying mostly a devotee? But it's to everyone, but especially according to how much God is manifest in one's heart. And in previous ages, they didn't have deities because God was so present in people's hearts. So really, the respect for a person is the degree that he surrendered and opened that God has appeared in his heart. And I said, yeah, you know, you want equal to everyone? I said, okay, then worship Donald Trump. Yeah. Why not, all you liberal people? And you know, open-minded, let's love everyone. Anyway, they got my point that there's distinctions. There's distinctions that are made. So let's, Rati, we'll chant this verse, okay? Dristai Swabhava Janatai. I'll say and you can repeat. Dristai Swabhava Janatai Vapushascha Doshai. Dristai Swabhava Janatai Vapushascha Na prakritatvam iha bhakta janasya pasyet. Na prakritatvam iha bhakta janasya pasyet. Gangam basam na kalubu buddhapena bhankai. Gangam basam na kalubu buddhapena bhankai. Brahmadravat. Swam apagachati niradharmai. Brahmadravatvam apagachati niradharmai. Being situated in his original Krishna conscious position, a pure devotee does not identify with the body. Such a devotee should not be seen from a materialistic point of view. Indeed, one should overlook a devotee's having a body born in a low family, a body with a bad complexion, a deformed body, or a diseased or infirm body. According to ordinary vision, such imperfections may seem prominent in the body of a pure devotee, but despite such seeming defects, the body of a pure devotee cannot be polluted. It is exactly like the waters of the Ganges, which sometimes during the rainy season are full of bubbles, foam, and mud. The Ganges water do not become polluted. Those who are advanced in spiritual understanding will bathe in the Ganges without considering the condition of the water. So it's a nice image that sometimes in spiritual things, there may be external things covering it, but you have to see the spiritual thing. And you have to relate to the spiritual thing. So, Rati, next verse. No, we did this. Okay, next. Now, I had a book. There was a study guide, and I didn't use it that much. But on this verse, I used it. And they describe what's happening in the purport. Say no to criticism of bodily defects of a Vaishnav. Say no to criticism of neglect because of birth. Say no to criticism of apparent misbehavior. Say no to materialistic vision. Say no to mistreatment of an empowered devotee. Say no to attempts to discipline or correct. Of course, you have students, but it means beyond that. And I'll just give you one example. Apparent misbehavior, it means someone may do something wrong. And even it says sudaracharo, a very bad thing. You know, because he may be a very sincere, practicing, dedicated devotee, but due to past samskaras, impressions and desires, being in the world, because sometimes Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes that our spiritual activities and our material activities become parallel. Because, you know, we have to eat, you know, we raise family, we have children. You know, so sometimes the material activities and the spiritual activities come, and you may get carried away with previous samskaras, impressions and attachments, and do something wrong. So be very careful to condemn that person. If he's a nunyabak, if he's actually, and I've seen this happen, I've seen devotees that are very, very fixed. But somehow or other, they get carried away or caught. And then it'll be really offensive to condemn them. Especially for the rest of their life even. So, and let's go to the next verse. Prabhupada says, Krishna consciousness movement is a transcendental science and there is no room for jealousy. Really, envy is so... Envy and criticism. Envy and criticism. Envy is when it's in the heart. And criticism... is it when it comes out, welcome, you'd like to come, please come. Okay. Okay, thank you. Okay, good. Envy is when it's in the heart and criticism is when it comes out. So sometimes it says that criticism is worse than envy. And sometimes it described that criticism is worse than throwing a spear through someone's heart, through one's body, because the spear can pierce the body and criticism can pierce the heart. So we have to be so careful. And I see in a Western culture sometimes they don't understand the subtleties of this. You know, it's not an offense as long as the fist stops 1 inch from the nose. But there's subtleties involved in criticism too. And someone just avoids it. If any of you don't have these bands, I brought some more. Did I tell you about how this works?
I saw it on the
okay. You asked for it. No, it's I always carry my bands.
Thank you.
Abby, do you have one?
No, I don't.
After class, I'll show you what we do with these. Okay? I'll show you how it works. But for now, it says Sri Radhe, so even if it doesn't. It's about avoiding criticism. And I'll show you the exercise. It'll just take a second. And I can't say this enough about your devotional life. If you can just avoid offense, bhakti is very simple. Avoiding offense is what's difficult. You know? And if anything, you know, someone can be in the Hare Krishna movement for 30, 40 years and not make advancement. Not make advancement because they commit offenses. And they're careless and they think that their duty is to correct everyone. And Prabhupada in the purport is also going to talk about envy. Because when people become successful, then it inspires envy. So successful preachers sometimes have to face a lot of criticism. And they feel very bad because it ruins other people's spiritual life. And also there's expression. Of course, there's legitimate correction, but you have to see if it's your service. And a lot of times, most of the times, it's not. Most of the time it's Krishna. And Prabhupada also describes it's like the pockmarks on the moon. The moon is so bright and someone only sees the pockmarks. So, you know, Prabhupada said, if you want, you can even find fault in me. So we have to be very, very careful. And I heard one good advice. Observe, don't talk. It's hard, Janina. Okay. I'm joking. Now, I just committed an offense, you see. I had it on there for a couple of weeks, but... It's a joke between me and Janine about the Enneagram. She knows it, right? Observe, don't talk. And it's you'll make so much advancement if you just keep your mouth shut. You'll make so much advancement in spiritual life. We have to be so careful. And especially if it's an advanced Vaishnava, you can ruin your spiritual life. And I'm going to tell you some stories about that. Yeah. Prabhupada says, an offense at the lotus feet of a Vaishnava is very serious. Indeed, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was described this event as Hati Mata, the mad elephant offense. And I describe, because if you have a garden, right, if you have a garden, you can protect it by fences in so many ways, and but if a mad elephant comes, it doesn't matter. It destroys everything. So it describes you can be very careful with your devotional practices, but if you commit offense and you start criticizing devotees, you know, for these external things, you know, because you'll find fault with anyone. You know, you don't know sometimes how hard someone is trying. You know, and sometimes... Prabhupada gave the example how habit is so powerful that there was one person who was a thief and he became a Vaishnava. But he had this tendency to be a thief. So he was on a pilgrimage and they had all their luggage ready to go on the train and no one could find their luggage. But what they found out is their luggage was just in another place. It wasn't stolen. So they couldn't understand what happened. He said, okay, he said, I'm a thief. I couldn't control myself, but I became a Vaishnav. I had to take things, but I just moved them around. But the point is, we have our natures. And another thing that's going to be brought out is when we make mistakes, we want mercy. We want people to understand. When other people make mistakes, we want justice. And it's called hypocrisy. You know, for ourselves, we want God to forgive and be kind and give us mercy, but for others, not. And that's called hypocrisy. So this really Vaishnav quality. There's one sadhu, he's famous in I have this kirtan, it's really far out kirtan. I can't even remember his name right now, but he always chants. So somehow or other, I got a book that he wrote about, you know, higher devotional subjects, and it was translated in English and practically mimeographed. You know, about really entering into the highest devotional realm. And it was like in terms of a story. And the whole story was about not criticizing to the nth degree. I mean, you know, no matter what happens, and your spiritual life will move very, very powerfully. And, you know, in my own personal life, I saw, you know, because when Prabhupada left, the oldest devotees were like 28, 29 years old. And Prabhupada had to make social divisions. So he made, you know, so people became gurus and sannyasis. But, you know, they weren't yet Vachuvegam, Manasakrodavegam, the first verse. It was very difficult. And I saw sometimes very senior Vaishnavas be criticized. And I saw people's spiritual life ruined for that. I saw that ruined. In fact, one very senior Vaishnav came here to America. And then someone invited him to a temple. But he wasn't part of that temple. He was from another organization. So he was invited innocently. And he happened to be someone who was very close to Prabhupada. That I know, very favorable to Prabhupada. So then when he came to the temple, he came to that particular temple, someone else was sitting there. So they said, what we'll do, we'll have someone else sitting there. So it's such an offense. But he's a Vaishnava, so he doesn't take offense. They say a very advanced Vaishnava doesn't take offense, but the dust of his lotus feet will take offense. That means his followers may. But anyway, he went away. Then 3 or 4 days later, I was driving with Pradyumna, who's Prabhupada's Sanskrit pundit. By the way, if anyone is interested in learning Sanskrit, let me know. He has so much knowledge, you can't imagine. But anyway, I was riding with him upstate, and he told me, you better start storing grains. I said, what do you mean? He said, you hear what happened? This advanced Vaishnava was offended, right? And then he quoted from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. There's a story where Lord Nityananda came to a village, Lord Chaitanya's associate, and he slept in what's called the Darshan Mandap. It's like a veranda. And then this person was so offensive that when he left, he washed it because he thought it was all impure. And he offended, and then he cooked meat there. And in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, what happened is, after that, the Muslims attacked the village and ravaged the whole village. This is historical. So what happened is, the verse says, for the offense of one Vaishnav, the whole village is destroyed. So at this particular time, he started to quote this to me, right? He said, oh, you better get your grains. I said, what? He said, You know, for the offensive one Vaishnava, the whole town's going to be destroyed, right? That was 3 days before 9/11.
No way.
Yeah, I'm not saying because something comes after it, it causes it, right? I'm not making that statement, but to me, it struck in my mind. You know, Vaishnava was very serious. Now, the interesting thing is when this old Vaishnav sannyasi couldn't go to that temple, you know where he went? He went to the World Trade Center. And what he did, he's so spontaneous and old, he did kirtan on the elevator.
No way.
All the way up to the top of the World Trade Center. And every time the door opened on a floor, there was this old sannyasi chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. So I also thought that many of those people may have been liberated also. But it's just serious. And you know, when I was in Vrindavan and sometimes there would be conflict and I would see someone like say something very heavy, I can feel just hearing it, my bones shatter. I can just feel the reverberation. Even when someone else did something wrong, when I saw the reaction, and I've witnessed in the Hare Krishna movement, because it was very young, you know, Bindrasarup Prabhu, he's a great, wonderful Vaishnava. He now is now my next door neighbor upstate. And he's a scholar too. He has a PhD from Ivy University of Pennsylvania. He was on the GBC and the chairman, many things he did, very dedicated person. He said at the beginning of the Hare Krishna movement, you know, when a great personality leaves, there's going to be difficulty, even in sports. If the great guy leaves, that's part of the glory. So there's Prabhupada's glory and the glory of his followers is that the movement carried on and we have what we have now, the Bhakti Center and everything. But it's just a natural, religious, sociological phenomena. And it's even said in the Shastras, when a great Acharya goes, part of his glory is there's going to be disturbance. So he said the problem with the Hare Krishna movement was that Prabhupada was the only adult. You know, now people say the good old days, but I think it's better now that we have so many mature, older people, so many years. You know, even people that are not gurus, you know, Kastubha have been devotees for, you know, 30 years practicing, and so many other people. But I've seen that. So I'm just saying that very, very strongly. Keep on going. We're doing pretty good today. One is forbidden to observe the activities of a pure Vaishnava from a material point of view. For the neophyte especially, considering a pure devotee from a material point of view is very injurious. One should therefore avoid observing a pure devotee externally, but should try to see the internal features and understand how he's engaged in transcendental loving service of the Lord. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur had this practice in his temple, right? That you had, I don't know how often he did it, but you had to pick a person that you really don't like and you had to serve him that week. Wow. He had some kind of, let me see, I can even find that part. Vaishnavism. I wrote an article, I think I'll post it on my thing. It's not against ISKCON, but the point said ISKCON's greatest deficiency. And what I talked about in that was the need for culture. How important it is not just to have a mission. Mission means why you do something. We transform consciousness. A vision, how you do something. We distribute books. We open temples. We hold kirtans. But a culture, how you do it. And the Vaishnav culture, you know, it's really something that we have to really learn and imbibe. And how we, We humbly serve people, and we very, very careful about how we deal with each other, you know. And the success, one of the most successful temples is Chaupati in Bombay, Radhanath Swami's temple. And it's not just, you know, the managers and things like that. It's because he sets the tone of a culture. Service of the Vaishnavas. And I think the Bhakti Center is flourishing and developing. I think Virabhadraram is a very good leader, not because he's a manager or so many things, because of the culture. He really tries to be a servant leader and develop relationships in that mood. So that's so important in Vaishnavism. Vaishnavachar, the behavior of a Vaishnava. After I finish this, I'm going to begin the book that I started, where I go through the Chaitanya Charitamrita and extract the lessons of behavior, how really Vaishnavas behave and how the culture is. It's so important. I'm going to see if... Here. In the time of our Guru Maharaj, there was a system in our mutt. Mutt means temple. Guru Maharaj ordered one Vaishnava to please another Vaishnava, especially one he does not like. That means he was forced to find the goodness in that devotee whom he didn't like. He should try to find good things in him. Eliminating the bad things in his conception of that devotee, he will search for anything that is good there, and thereby he will be benefited. No culture of any bad thing anywhere, especially with the devotees, because Krishna has taken charge of those surrendered souls. What is good and what is bad is his responsibility. Those evil things in the devotee may disappear at any time, and Krishna will allow that to continue in order to serve some purpose. Such devotees are under Krishna's direct charge. They are ananyabhak, fixed in devotion. And he makes a beautiful point here. When you see the poison in others, that poison will come to you. So this Vaishnav culture, that's why I like Satya Hari. He's a nice Vaishnava. He hates me saying that. What? But gentle, considerate, giving to people, that kind of culture. And that type of culture, if you want to spread Krishna consciousness, that's what will attract people. The culture of the place that you work, the culture of your temple, the culture of your community, it's not what you say it is, it's what people feel when they enter. And again, I think very happy how the Bhakti Center is developing in that way and really trying to set an example in that way. And it's not just the dealings with others, it starts with the dealings inside. So, and I'll tell you one personal story in this. What you say, you know, like, we change the names to protect the innocent. But I'll tell you a story, you know. And people will know it is, but I'd rather not mention names. But I used to, you know, there was this one elderly Vaishnava, and, you know, he even sent the first Madanga and Kartals to Prabhupada in America. And so I used to have a pretty good friendship with him, and I used to go learn and study sometimes when I can get away. And but at a particular time, it just the way the world is, he became a very big preacher and there became a conflict. And sometimes when there's conflicts, you can't say where they started, but it seems like each side misbehaved somehow. And I'm not saying any side misbehaved, but the perception became that, not that, you know, that things were heavy and things. Then what happened is he passed away. So at the Krishna Balaram Mandir, there was a function. because the head pujari was actually his disciple. So I went to that function. It wasn't that many people we went. And when I talked, you know, because I knew in people's mind, some people had this mind of this conflict. What I said, and actually it was something that Bhakti Rakshaka Sridhar Maharaj said, what I said is that, you know, I don't want to talk about any conflict. I want to talk about the inspired side of a Vaishnava. There's ordinary dealings and there's the inspired side. And, you know, that's the important thing. Because all the other things, you can't even decipher sometimes where conflicts develop, and sometimes someone's criticized, and then he has students, and then to protect the faith of his student that he criticizes. And it's unavoidable in the world. But as Vaishnavas, we have to see the inspired side. I really try to follow that. Because everyone is struggling, everyone is difficult, everyone has their ambitions, but I see the sincerity of people and their dedication to Prabhupada, their dedication to his mission, their dedication to their gurus. We see the inspired side and we honor that and we worship that. And that's so important. So now the different no's. So the first one is the bodily defects. And there's so many ways to see externally, and we have to be very careful to see externally by ethnicity, you know. You see, when anything is big, there's always going to be good and bad. It's just the way it is. You know, when you have institutions, they serve a purpose. Like water, you can't have a boat without water, but water can get in the boat. So there'll always be. It's just like the Catholic Church. You have to respect the Catholic Church, actually. No institution saved as many people. No institution killed as many people. No institution had as many saints. No institution had as many sinners. No institution had as many celibates. No institution had as many devout. I mean, it goes on and on. And you have to belong to a community. And whatever community you have, there's going to be faults. There's going to be difficulties. And in a spiritual community, if you focus on that, you won't make advancement in spiritual life. And then you'll see, sometimes people, they focus on ethnicity, spiritual life ruined, gender, spiritual life ruined, talking in disparaging ways about women, spiritual life ruined, ethnicity ruined. Yeah. Because offense, when you commit offense, what is spiritual life? Spiritual life is your love for Krishna. And when you offend people, it'll ruin your love for Krishna.
Like putting the blockers up between you.
Yeah, yeah. It's just a fact. When you offend people, when you commit offense, it just takes away your devotion. Aparad, radha means worship. Aparad means to distance yourself from worship. It's just a science. I even feel in my spiritual life. I'll feel it the next day. If sometimes I get angry at someone, and there are reasons to be so. And when I get angry for someone, you know, because I have my nature too, and someone steps on your toe and you tolerate and tolerate and tolerate and tolerate, and then boom, the rubber band snapped, then what happens is you'll feel it. And, you know, when you're chanting, some days the name will come, some days the name won't come. And the days the name won't come will definitely be the days that you do things like that. The name won't come. And then, and in fact, if we just learn to, you know, one thing when I was chanting and I was just seeing the depth of people's chanting, it was so pleasurable to see the depth from their hearts that people are chanting. And I'm just saying that, you know, maybe you are like working outside and things like that, but maybe it gives you less opportunity to commit offense. I'm serious. You have to be very careful to get close. You know, I'm serious. It's maybe I'm just seeing the hearts pouring out and the chanting pouring out from the hearts here. I'm just saying, well, okay. Of course, the best is to be in a situation with devotees and fully committed and think, but not to offend them. Yeah.
It's not that, that when we offend people, it takes away from our...
Especially our Krishna. And worse than Krishna is Krishna's devotees.
Right.
Yeah.
Or that takes that, it spiritually robs us because our minds are focused on the material mindset.
It's not just focus, it's bhakti is given by God. And if you offend God, he'll take away the bhakti. You take away the bhakti. It's not that God takes away the bhakti. It's the opposite conception. And it goes into the heart. And the offenses are there. So we have to be very, very careful to be respectful as Vaishnavas. And I'm glad I'm speaking because I'll remind myself for the next week. So very careful, not externally. And next, whatever may be externally seen in the character of Vaishnava is like the mud bubbles and foam in the Ganges. The purifying capacity, the Ganges water is separate and cannot be disturbed by any foam of dirt. The spiritual capacity does not depend in any way on the apparent material capacity. Now, there's a story, too, with Lord Chaitanya that he was coming through a town and there was one person had terrible leprosy, but he was actually a great devotee. And, you know, somehow he always just wanted to see Lord Chaitanya. And they described that he was so saintly that when the worms would fall out of his sores, he put the worms back in. And he was very, very saintly, and somehow Lord Chaitanya came through and somehow didn't, you know, greet him or something. And then Lord Chaitanya walked out of town and then just got the inspiration and came back and embraced him, you know. And then a similar story with Rupa Goswami. His elder brother was his guru named Sanatan Goswami, and he was a very, very saintly person. And very, very humble, even though at one time he was like practically a president of a country. He was the chief minister of a country. And he was so learned, and you can't imagine. But he came to Lord Chaitanya, he gave up everything, and he was very humble. And because to protect the Vaishnavas, he had to work in the Muslim government, and therefore had to have a Muslim name. His name was Sakara Malik. So practically he was ostracized from the Brahmin community too. So when he became a devotee, they wouldn't let him go into the Jagannath Mandir, the temple, because they're strictly with Hindus and things like that. And then he went to see Lord Chaitanya, and you know he had to escape because the king was dependent on him because he was such an advisor. So somehow he had to bribe the jail keeper, and he had to go through the jungle, and he got this terrible disease with sores on his body. And then Lord Chaitanya saw him and just embraced him. And then Lord Chaitanya said, Kriya Kariya Lingana na Karitama Yabe, Krishna Tane Aparada Danda Patimatabe. If I had hated Sanatana Goswami and not embraced him, I would certainly have been chastised for offenses to Krishna. So sometimes it may be a Vaishnava that's deformed or something else, and you have to be very careful not to deal with him on that external level. And be averse because of a bodily type thing. You know, so to be very careful.
Also, like bodily things, that's the nature of the material world. It's not dependent upon who we are or what is in our heart. So by offending someone because they look differently or whatnot, it's not taking into account like their dedication.
Exactly. You said it very nicely. And this is specifically talking about people who are manifesting God fully in their heart, how we should deal with them. And again, I can't say this more than enough, that ISKCON is spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. Everything we have is by its mercy. But if it has a weakness sometimes, is being so big, that kind of criticism goes, you know, and it's so important to develop, you know, the culture, the real Vaishnav culture. I'm not going to give you this exercise this week, to find someone who annoys you and try to please them. If someone wants to try it, they can. Okay, I won't order that one. Like, stopping criticism is hard enough for you. Okay, and say no to criticism or neglect because of birth. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, there's a thing in India that only Brahmins, you know, it's a caste system. And you know, there were social divisions in society, it may have had a function, but not to see someone on that level. And Radhanath Swami, he told me once one thing that gave him a lot of pleasure. You know, he has these big festivals in India, and there's people literally that are millionaires or billionaires. So one of his disciples is one of the biggest industrialists in India. And India is very caste conscious. You know, even social divisions, people don't mix in ways. Okay. But, you know, when the Vaishnavas to get together and there was a rip-roaring kirtan and he saw this, you know, this millionaire industrialist dancing wildly in the middle with his driver. So he appreciated that, you know, not, you know, this is not such a problem for us, but in India it's a problem. And when Prabhupada came, people didn't want to accept his disciples because they were, you know, from across the ocean. In certain Vaishnav lines, you're not allowed to cross the ocean because you cross the ocean, what is it? It's yavanas and malechas. It's meat eaters. They're called yavanas and malechas. You can't cross. One of the acharyas, he crossed the ocean. They didn't want to let him back in the temple, and he was the guru. And then he had a picture with George and Laura Bush. Yeah. I don't know what he was thinking. But crossing the ocean. And Prabhupada brought all the people from across the ocean there. And he not only made them, you know, he gave them sannyas. Young people. And Prabhupada defended them against so much criticism. And you'll see in the purport, Prabhupada's upset that even he was criticized. Prabhupada was not in a Brahmin family. Prabhupada was from a mercantile family. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was not from a Brahmin family. He was from a Kayastha family. You know, and Gorkishore Das Babaji was not from a Brahmin family. But Bhakti Siddhanta defended vigorously and successfully on the basis of Shastra that Kiba Vipa, Kiba Nasi, Kena Sudrahoi, Ye Krishna Veta Tattva Se, It doesn't matter if you're a Brahmin. Kiba Vipa, Kiba Nasi. It doesn't matter if you're a sannyasi. Kiba Vipa, Kiba Nasi. Kena Sudrahoy. It doesn't matter if you're a Sudra. Ye Krishna Tattva Veta. If you know the science of Krishna, say Guru Hoy. Satkarma, Nipano Vipro. You may know Satkarma, all the little rituals. Satkarma, Nipano Vipro, expertly. Mantra. You may know mantra. Tantra. You know, may Tantra Vishra. A Vaishnavo, Guru Nisyat. If you're not humble, you can't be a guru. Vaishnavo, Guru Sat. If you're humble and surrender to God, you can become guru. So people, to criticize because of birth and make those distinctions and not see the level of surrender in people. And I've been in different places in the world, you know, and you'll always see in any country, continent, place, etc., you'll see pure Brahmins. Regardless of ethnicity, race, any other type of thing. Next. One should not think, oh, here is an American Goswami and discriminate against him. Sometimes people flatly tell the American devotees that their sannyas or title of Goswami is not bona fide. However, according to the statements of Rupa Goswami in this verse, an American Goswami and a Goswami of a family of acharyas are non-different. They wouldn't even let, because Bhakti Siddhanta was giving diksha, which is the Brahmin initiation, to people from Sudra families. They were locking him out of temples and even threatening to kill him. And one time there was a plot to kill him. And one of his disciples, Prabhupada's sannyas guru named Bhakti Pragyan Kesha Maharaj, he looked a little bit like Bhakti Siddhanta. So he saw that these people were going to kill him. They used to throw stones. They would close the temples because he was opening up Krishna consciousness to everyone. And anyone can be a Goswami. That the famous story, he was in white, and he gave Bhakti Siddhanta his clothes, and he took Bhakti Siddhanta's saffron clothes. And then Bhakti Siddhanta was able to escape. So Bhakti Siddhanta was very strong on this, and so is Lord Chaitanya. Next verse. This probably will be discussed. I'll go quickly now. And this one is very important. Say no to criticism of apparent misbehavior. This is a verse from Gita. Apiche sudaratra. Atra means behavior. Du means bad. And su means very bad. Abominable. Bhajate mamananyabhak. But if he's practicing Krishna consciousness, not gyan, not for liberation, karma, not for material things, but he's actually trying to please Krishna. Sadhu or eva, some, you should think him of a sadhu. Samyak vyavastito, because he is situated properly. So it's not that an offense to the holy name is you commit sin on the strength of chanting. This means accidental. Your modes, your nature, we all know ourselves. We do things that we shouldn't do. We do things that we shouldn't do. And they'll last. There's some scars, there's impressions, there's karmic periods. So, and Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, he tells one story about this. No, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, that's the father of Prabhupada's guru, and also his guru. He told one story that he had a dream. he had a dream. And this we'll discuss in more depth next week, because it's a very... He had a dream, and in the dream, he saw that Vyasadeva and all these great personalities, they were looking at this verse, and they had a confusion, because it says you should consider him saintly. Then the next verse says, Shipram Bhavati Dharmava, he will quickly become righteous. So he said, no, he is righteous. Why do you say he'll quickly become righteous? And they couldn't figure out. Why do you say he'll quickly become righteous? He is righteous. There's no prayaschitya. There's no atonement in bhakti. He made a mistake, but he's now situated in bhakti. So they couldn't figure it out. All the great sages, Vyasadeva himself, couldn't figure it out. And then what happened is... They saw Bhaktivinoda Thakur floating in the sky. They said, oh, there's a great devotee. Let's ask him. And he said, because the second verse, he'll become righteous, is the person who sees in this way the person who committed the abominable action. He's the one that will be, he's already righteous. He'll become righteous. And this is another thing I see that... you know, people will harbor on the external rather than see the person's sincerity and dedication. And I was in Vrindavan once, again, the culture that I saw. And there was this one man, and he was an elderly Indian man, and he donated the land that the Gurukul is on. That land's worth millions of dollars in Vrindavan. He donated. And he was never married. He was like from a business family. And he had this house near the temple. When you go out the guest house and you go on that road to the Prikram path, then there's like a nice house. It's called Nittai Navas. It's the second house from the end. And he was a really nice man. And he used to go and he used to massage Prabhupada. And he used to tell Prabhupada Hindi jokes. I knew him so well. I knew this man very, very well. I used to stay at his house. He used to let me stay there. Even tell Prabhupada a Hindi joke about, the Hindi joke that he told Prabhupada. It was something about the sadhu was going back to Godhead, right? But he didn't want to go because he found out there was no Britannica Bistics and Lipton tea. And I'm glad you laughed, but you'd laugh even more if you were in India and you knew that fact. But what happened to this person is somehow or other he had, you know, he never got married, he had a maid, and he did something, and then the local kind of mafia or something, they found out, and they really were like, you know, broadcasting it. And he belonged to some other sampradaya called the Char Sampradaya. I was so impressed, and I saw his godbrothers come over, you know, and just deal with him with such compassion. You know, not kicking your brother when you're down, not dealing with him with such compassion. And they also told him, you're older, and you have your own house here, you should come live in the ashram. An interesting thing, he moved to the ashram, and the next day he died. But he died in Vrindavan, and I went to his funeral ceremony. So these kind of things, I'm speaking with passion on it because I'm really into the culture of Krishna consciousness and Vaishnava behavior and the importance of that. And then Prabhupada talks a little bit personally in the purports because he received so much criticism. You know, so many stories I can tell. And he spoke strongly. But even though he spoke so strongly to protect his disciples from people who were criticizing him, when Prabhupada left the world, he sent messages to beg forgiveness before he left the world too. So somehow he felt he had to speak very, very strong to protect his young disciples who could get confused with people criticizing him. So, next. Wait, where is it? Yeah, go next. One more. Say no to mistreatment of an empowered devotee. So Prabhupada spoke very strongly. And go next. Be very careful about advising, you know, empowered people. Be careful. Then this is the essence of it. Next, Ruti. If you try to find fault with anyone, if you criticize for your personal interest, that fault will come to you, especially when that is in the devotee section. By connecting with poison in someone else's body, that poison will enter into you. But if you seek help from the higher, for purification, not of envy, then you'll be purified. Then that thing is there. And the last one, and that's it. So now what you'll do is we'll have a 5-minute writing exercise. Remember, it's free writing. Free writing means even if you don't know what to say, keep your pen moving. And the reason I say that is because when the pen moves, the mind moves and so many things. Do you need a pen and paper? You'll help her there. Okay, I want you to begin free writing, just what you remember, and keep the pen moving. Okay, you can stop now. It's great. It seems like people have a lot to say. Now, we have to break up into, underline one thing that you kind of felt struck you the most, and then we can do some sharing.